for Out to Lunch Acadiana is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com. Support also comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
From Cafe Vermilionville in Lafayette, we're out to lunch with Professor of Finance and Director of the award-winning Birken Road Reports, Peter Ricchiuti. It's business, Acadiana style.
Hi, I'm Peter Ricchiuti. Welcome to Out to Lunch. If you're home right now, maybe you've got some yogurt in the refrigerator. If you're in the car, you might have a pen in the cup holder. Probably one of those free pens you get from a bank or an insurance company or the plumber. And if you're at your desk, more than likely you've got a computer keyboard in front of you. Now, all these items have something in common. The keyboard has keys with letters printed on them. The pen has a name and a phone number printed on it. And the yogurt has a pastoral scene and the container's contents printed on it. All this printing is done by specialized printers that transfer ink onto all these various odd-shaped surfaces. One of the methods in this kind of printing is called inkjet. And one of the well-known brands of inkjet printing is LogoJet. In 2015, LogoJet was named by Ink Magazine as one of the fastest-growing companies in America. Previous companies who have made that list include Pandora, Toys R Us, 7-Eleven. Unlike these other companies, LogoJet is right here in Lafayette. Its founder and president is Susan Cox. Susan, welcome out to lunch.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. Long before anyone had figured out how to put a logo on a plastic yogurt container, people were putting images on flat surfaces like canvas. They used a much slower and more painstaking method, a small brush, coming up with an idea and painting it onto canvas, framing it with wood and selling it. Now, that's a business model that stood the test of time. Even though we can print thousands of images an hour or steal them off the internet, we still greatly value original, hand-created paintings of artists, especially those whose work records and reflects our unique culture, like the striking and beautiful paintings of Lafayette artist Herb Rowe. Herb, welcome out to lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Herb, in most people's minds, we tend to contrast business with the arts. There's the wound, too-tight business people at the one end of the spectrum and the free spirit artists at the other end. But actually, when you decide to walk away from the 9-to-5 and spend all day painting, aren't you in fact doing the exact same thing as an entrepreneurial business person does? It seems to me you're taking a massive business risk, starting up what is essentially a one-person manufacturing company. What gave you the business confidence to make the leap?
Well, I had worked for someone who does that, who had done that their entire life. I apprenticed to him, worked for him for 15 years, so it wasn't that big a leap. I just wasn't working for him anymore.
Yeah,
I was just doing the same thing. And it, like you said, it's a business, it's a job. And not all artists treat it that way, but a lot of artists also have day jobs, so they're free to not treat art as a business. But when you are a full-time artist, it's more than just a the wishy-washy voodoo calling.
I'm going
to go express myself. You sit down, in the morning and you work all day, and you probably put in more hours than most people in the business world, and you work weekends and you work nights, and so you're always constantly doing stuff.
That's what writers always tell me, that they don't wait for inspiration. They
right. Oh, no, you have to. It's the same way, you hear about writers, they sit down and try to do so many word counts or page counts a day, and then they go do their other stuff. But they sit down in the morning, like Stephen King, one of the most prolific writers ever. He does a certain page and word count that he sits down every morning and does. And when I get to my studio, I sit down every morning. It doesn't matter if I'm inspired. I've always got 5 or 6 things, going on. If I'm inspired, great. I'll sit and work on that the whole time. But if not, there's plenty of grunt work that I have to just sit and put the hours in and do it. It doesn't take inspiration to do a lot of that. I've been doing this for 25 years, A lot of it's just rote mechanical skill,
Well,
the inspiration is great when you're putting it together.
Right.
But when you're doing something that labor-intensive,
I've seen your work. It's pretty
amazing.
You sit,
and you work, and you work, and you work.
Now, Susan, as I alluded to in the introduction, things with words and images printed on them are virtually everywhere. When you start looking around, it seems like everything has words or images printed on it. From the steering wheel of the car to the coffee maker in the kitchen to the supermarket bag, most of us take all these printed images for granted. When did you start noticing all of this and start thinking, hey, this would be a good business to get into?
Well, I've always taken notice of different materials that were printed. They're all different processes. There's not always necessarily one technology that did it all. But I guess it started when I was really young. I was 7 years old, and I went to a Kmart, and it was Easter, and you get those large Easter chocolates.
Oh, yeah.
And they're spelling my name on it. And so already, you know, I get this chocolate, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is too beautiful for me to eat. And so already I felt a connection with something that was, okay, personalized, something that was written on there. So then as growing up, I'm looking at things, oh, I wonder how they printed that, you know. I wonder if they hand wrote it with icing at the time. And then as you get older, you get exposed to different technologies, different work. And I've always gravitated to imprintables, in whether it meant something that was printed, not with our technology necessarily, even if it was paper, I'm looking at the lines on it, the quality. And so I've always had that, you know, close to my heart.
And what were you doing? Was there a printing device or a business before LogoJet?
There were a bunch of different businesses for me. My businesses have just kind of evolved. I started doing telecommunications, failed at that. I started doing importing of transistors and diodes, semiconductors, and then it kind of evolved into promotional products, which is where I found the most fun. I was like, wow, look at all this product. I mean, it was endless, you know, the type of applications, the logos on different products. People would find anything to put their logo on and promote them. So I love sales. And so I was always selling something. But, yeah, I think that it's just endless. Even if it's not promotional, it's even something that's decorated on your watch.
And what is this? Tell me about the – I haven't seen the product. What does it look like, the jet itself?
It's evolved over the years. It started with a basic Epson printer that was chopped up from printing on paper to do something else. And so it started printing on golf balls. And so that's what we were known for in the beginning. And then
now, what was that, the golf ball?
It was a golf ball printer that I made.
But,
basically.
I mean, you have golfballs.com. Now, that's your family business, right?
No, that's actually how I met my husband, Tom. I know that you had out to lunch with him at one point, and he bought one of my first printer models back in 2005. I made my first machine, and so I called him, and I was from Canada at the time. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, who should purchase my machine? And it prints on golf balls, so I do research on the Internet, and golfballs.com showed up as top. And I said, I should call this guy and tell him that I've got something he needs.
That's the best cold call story I've ever heard.
Yeah, and, you know.
You sold the piece of equipment, and you married him.
Five years later.
Wow.
And so just,
you know, we're going to have to say on the show, we're going to have to say your results may differ. You know, so people don't begin to. Now, how did you just make the machine? I see there was a printer, something we'd see like an Epson. What, you start tinkering with it?
I didn't personally tinker with it. I was fortunate to connect myself with an engineer that was in South Korea that had done something like that. And so we kind of collaborate together and bring in software, bring in cosmetics of how you want to present the equipment and make a business package that would make sense to sell in the United States, which is much different than it is in Asia.
Right.
You kind of have to cater it to a particular audience. Yeah.
Well, how did you, now that, given us one example of where we'd see that printer, but who else would be buying that from you?
Our customers range from all sorts of industries, from sign, promotional, medical, pharmaceutical, it could be a watch manufacturer that wants to print on the dials. It could be an industrial manufacturer that prints on gauges and construction materials. It could be an artist. You know, we had somebody that came to us, and she sells these little ornaments that she actually paints, and it takes her 3 hours to do each one, and she got an order for 500 and didn't. She's like, that's going to take me a lifetime to continue painting. And so we said, well, let's scan it and print it with our equipment, and now we're replicating the art pieces. for example. So
now, and that's a good question. You have the machine. Do you just sell the machine, or do you do the printing?
We just sell the machine. We want to make machines, and throughout the years, they've gotten bigger. They've improved on ink technology, and so our applications then grow to larger applications. And so we specialize in producing the equipment. We sell it. We distribute it, and then we also do all the marketing and support here in Lafayette. We do all the manufacturing still in South Korea.
Oh, wow, that is terrific. And, you know, Herb, I got to ask, I've never been an artist, and I'm just thinking about this artist business side. I would think, the average person might not think of it this way, but I bet it's sort of stressful. I mean, you know you've got to produce something.
Not really.
No?
I mean, I've always been lucky enough to have more ideas of stuff that I want to do than time to do them all. So it's not like you're sitting there just waiting for inspiration to strike you. But also, it's like what you do. You like mass produce lots of stuff, or your clients who use your technology do. But my stuff takes me forever to do just one. So it's being able to produce, because they're all handmade, handcrafted, individual. Even when I try to reproduce one, like somebody really likes one, but that's already sold, they're like, "I want that one." I'm like, "Well, it'll be close. It's not going to be identical."
Right.
And there's 10, 15 hours a day over several weeks to produce one. There's thousands, maybe even millions on some of the bigger ones, of individual little decisions that you constantly are making. You can never completely duplicate that process again for another work. I mean, you can make it look close. You can tell it's by the same artist.
Right.
It'll be the same image. It'll be, but it won't be identical. So.
But that's what's unique about it.
That's what's great about it,
right. Well, and that's a part of my marketing that I do with my clients is you're buying a unique thing that's going to be a family heirloom. You take care of this. This technology's been around for 600 years. Mostly in oils, yeah. So, this technology's been around for 500 or 600 years. If you take care of it in a certain way, avoid humidity and other stuff like that, keep it out of the UV, it can last for hundreds of years. So, you're not just investing in something nice to hang on your wall. You pass it to your kids, their kids, their kids. So, you're buying an heirloom when you buy something like this.
Yeah. And is there a goal, like how many you need to produce each month, or... I'm thinking more like the way Susan would be thinking.
I produce anywhere from 20 to 40 paintings a year. And I do a couple-month break in the summer, and I still go paint murals for a couple months and visit my daughter in Kentucky. But most of the time, I'm just in my studio. And, some of them are, little 8x10s, but my bigger stuff is 3 foot by 4 foot and, really detailed with 30 or 40 figures and all kinds of stuff. So some of those will spend... I'll be on them for a couple of months. But I try to do at least 20 a year, and sometimes I'll get up to 40 if I do a bunch of the smaller side and then not so many of the bigger ones.
And if you think about your two businesses, Susan, you've got the facility here in Lafayette, but most of your sales are somewhere else, right? I mean, is it online?
It's everywhere. It's worldwide. We just came back from Australia training a customer. We're just getting ready to go to Thailand to install a printer. But a lot of it is in the United States, though. So, we have a few customers here in Louisiana, but most of them are everywhere else, Chicago, New York, California. So we do a lot of shows that are nationwide, larger print shows to kind of show off the equipment and, attract buyers who are looking to decorate on something and they're trying to solve a problem.
What's the weirdest one you've been given, in terms of something people wanted to print on?
We've done marshmallows. Those were kind of interesting. And, with some edible ink.
What kind of ink?
With an edible ink.
Oh, I was going to say, because these s'mores are going to be really kind of toxic if they don't. Wow.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun with that. we've done a lot of different shoes. Yeah, been bags. But I guess, it's never the same thing that comes to.
Right, no matter how weird it is, you think, don't worry, we can do this.
In our society, field is almost unlimited because we're literally drowning in text every hour of the day in modern life. So you can, anything you can think of, someone will eventually want to put text on it with technology.
And for the artist side of things, we've seen them evolve into moving away from canvas onto glass, onto wood, onto metal,
aluminum. I have some friends who do a lot of stuff on aluminum. And I use masonite a lot.
Okay.
But I do all kinds of stuff.
And that's one thing that people don't appreciate, that the swelling, the cracking, the material, and it's just for them.
About
they think
all
it's
kinds
just
of
paint.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, on a material, and you've thought about all of that.
Well, especially with oil paints, because you, the way you mix the oils into the pigments, the way you build your successive layers, because I use a lot of layering and glazing, like Renaissance-style techniques where you do this really detailed underdrawing and underpainting, and then your colors go in translucent glazes, and then you work multiple layers of glazing and scumbling over that to build up your depth and your color and stuff. But you have to add successive layers, the oil, more oil into the paint as you go higher. You have to do it really lean at the bottom and really fat at the top. Because if it dries too fast on top and it stays wet under, that can eventually cause surface cracking. So it's very, very technical how you have to do it.
Wow.
Yeah. All of that kind of went out the window with the Impressionists, with this, once they started doing like a la prima kind of stuff where you just mix it and put it on the surface and that's kind of it. But with the layered glazing, it's you know, you're almost doing alchemy. it's very, very, you know, it's kind of like a lot of chemistry. You know, you got to think about how things are going to work together. And
you are literally
there are additives
a Renaissance
that you add
man.
Stuff in to make it dry more, or dry slower, or so you can keep it blending more, and you know, all kinds of weird stuff like that.
Wow. Now, Susan Herb, I've reached the part of the show where we call your brother-in-law. Okay, now here it goes. You're at work, concentrating on something that really needs to get done when your phone rings. Normally, you just let it go to voicemail, but you see it's your brother-in-law. He doesn't usually call unless there's a good reason, like he needs to get bailed out of jail. So you pick up the phone. This time, the conversation is a little different. Susan, your brother-in-law says he's got a great idea. He's going to sell advertising on the frames of eyeglasses. He's done the research. Over 100 million Americans a day are looking at a person wearing eyeglasses. The average cost of a pair of eyeglasses is around $400. Printing ads on eyeglasses would lower the cost of the frames and be an untapped way to get an advertiser's message out there. You've got the equipment. Your brother-in-law just needs $5,000 for the patent attorney. If you put it up, he'll cut you in. What do you tell him?
Oh, that's a tough story. First of all, do you know who my brother-in-law is?
No.
Because that would...
that really
I just
is the
make
most
sure
important
here.
Part.
But I have customers who actually do exactly what you just said.
Really?
Yep.
And you were making the whole thing up.
Yeah, I was. It's not that brilliant. No, I'm joking.
All right, back to our day job.
But the customers who are doing it, they're having great success because a lot of the times people associate glasses with just a product that they wear and they're not accessorizing it and making designs and putting logos and everything. And it's now becoming something that's popular now. So I think it's a great idea, first of all. I'm not going to say, hey, listen, that's a dumb idea. Because, you know, sometimes when you're talking to customers and you get your family, you're like, that's really dumb, you know?
I've seen a lot of really dumb ideas just skyrocket and go places I never thought, you know, turn people into millionaires. And it's like, I still think it's kind of a dumb idea.
Right, I'm glad they didn't
like
come to me.
A lot of people don't.
Well, and with family, you can do that. You love each other. You're going to say it. And there's no way to make it sound any nicer sometimes. But hey, if this is the passion, they've done the research, let's go down the path of have you done this and have you done that. And so I'm all about the exercise, I guess.
Right.
Let's go down the exercise and make sure you've done all that proper planning and that what is your plan for success? How are you going to get there? What resources do you have? What's your supply chain look like? Because you can have one great supplier and one great idea, and all of a sudden you hit the ground running, and that guy, you can't even get a phone call back.
Right.
Now what are you going to do? And so I'm more into kind of being more skeptical.
So you're not going to give them the money, but you're going to give, this is invaluable advice.
Right. Well, actually, and as a family, you know, I would probably give them the money, but I don't want to be a partner in it.
Yeah.
I'd rather, hey.
Seen too many of those family work things.
I have.
Before.
And
my little brothers are all,
my
family business is kind of like cellular phone towers. My little brothers all work in the industry building and maintaining cellular phone towers. Like, and I'm the oldest of seven kids, right?
Wow.
See, Clayton, Aaron, David, Cliff, four of them. And they got about six or eight of our cousins. and about 10 of our friends from high school. So it's kind of like this, you know, they travel all over the country. The one, he lives in right side of San Diego now and has his own company there. My other brother in Ohio has his company. A couple of the other brothers and cousins and stuff bounce back and forth between working for him. They're always getting mad about something. Somebody's always fighting. Somebody's this always not talking.
Drama.
It's drama, yeah.
You're glad.
And,
you're
and every time like when it happens, I'm like, I told you to quit hiring family.
Yeah. A few things. Don't hire family.
Mm-hmm. Or if you do, you just got to kind of realize
that.
It's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're going to give money, don't ever expect it back.
Always consider it a loan.
That's just something I've
learned. Like, you know, be happy if you get it back, but you always consider it a loan. Like, well, a gift.
Gift, yeah, yeah, gift,
you
really.
Know, a gift. Like,
a gift.
Don't expect.
Yeah.
It's funny. At the university, we have a family business forum, and I once asked the guy that ran it, I said, what do you teach them? Is it half accounting, half finance? He goes, no, it's a third accounting, a third finance, third psychiatry. You know, it's something.
That sounds about right.
I know.
Well, with my family, it's been like 20, 60.
I do have a brother that works with me, though, and he's been with the company for over 10 years.
We're going to keep him?
And we are, but I am probably the hardest on him, if anything.
Oh, I bet. That's the way
well, that's the problem my brothers always have with the brothers. They're always harder on
that's
the brothers,
natural.
You know, expecting more of them, and they kind of get upset every once in a while, you know, the pressure and stuff. And
it's out of love. Kinda,
like a couple of them. Something would happen. I'd get a call. Half an hour later, I'd get a call from the other one.
Oh, right.
I'd still be on the phone and get the other
one
calling me.
You're the oldest
brother.
So they
call me, each one to tell their side of the, and you know, kind of complain about the other. And it's like, as soon as I see one of them call me, I'm like, oh, God.
Well, Herb, I'm going to turn it on you now. Herb, your brother-in-law says he's been inspired by your lifestyle and your work, and he's decided to quit his job and pursue a life in art. He's taken the money he's been saving to put his kid through college and decided to invest it in buying an art gallery that's for sale in River Ranch. What do you tell him?
Ooh, good luck.
And you love him because Susan just said you loved him. So
yeah. Art galleries are a completely different animal than being an artist, though. I mean, they're notoriously hard to run. They're notoriously hard to operate. Most people take them on as a labor love. They're almost more like a restaurant, you know?
Yeah.
How many people do you know make money on a restaurant? It's usually a labor of love kind of thing. You don't go into it expecting to be a billionaire, I mean, unless you're, you know, Ray Kroc.
Right.
But, you know, galleries,
it's just a tough business.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough business. And the people that I know who are successful at it, you know, you kind of, they're really good salesmen. You have to be. I mean, because you're not even like me when I'm trying to sell my own work. You're trying to sell somebody else's work. And even if you really believe in them, you know, you're pushing product.
Well, I was just thinking about when you're
like,
talking
about some people that I deal with in New Orleans, they're, you know, really good salesmen. They've been working with them for a year or so now, and they're doing really good stuff for me. But they're, you know, one of them, his day gig is a salesman, and the other one, his former day gig before he retired, was in, like, a business. So, you know, like banking.
Right, right.
And but they've,
they're not artists.
But them, they've taken this on, and he's doing it as a labor of love. He wants to, his daughter's an artist, so he wants to give, you know, build a business for her, so he started a gallery. But even he's like, man, it's rough out here.
Now, Herb, your place is a studio in the back and a gallery in the front?
Or? Well, it's a big warehouse, and we have a gallery space downstairs, like a communal gallery space. And my studio is upstairs in that big part of the building that sticks up in the middle. But then we also have a recording studio in the building. There's a ceramicist, a pottery.
Now, why the recording studio? Are you a musician as well?
There. No. Chris Stafford has Staffland Studios there.
Yeah.
So we get, you know, rotating hundreds of musicians in and out of there a year, doing all kinds of, a couple of Grammy-nominated albums have come out of there in the last couple of years.
There's one great warehouse.
Yeah. We've got, you know, a couple other painters. Robert Dafford, the muralist that I worked for a long time, his big mural painting studio is in the same building. Rocky Perkins and Brett Shigoy both have space. There's a boudoir photographer.
Really?
Amy Peacock has rents a couple little small studio spaces there for doing her photo shoots. So we have a lot of, you know, it's an interesting space right there. And, you know, all of Freetown's kind of becoming like that, really interesting.
Cool,
a lot of artists and musicians galleries and stuff, so it's nice.
Great. Well, Susan Herve, you represent opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to methods of transferring images from the brushstroke to the laser jet, but your contributions to the local economy and culture are equally valuable. Your individual successes are a great measure of the vast spectrum of what's achievable here in Acadiana. From unique art that couldn't come from anywhere else to one of the country's fastest growing companies whose products can be found all around the world. It's been great to meet both of you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me for Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
Enjoyed this a lot. My guests at Out to Lunch today have been fine artist Herve Rowe and Susan Cox, founder and president of LogoJet. You can find out more about Herb's art and Susan Printers by following the links on our websites, krvs.org and itsacadiana.com. Today's show is recorded live over lunch at Cafe Vermilionville in Lafayette. Cafe V is open 6 days a week for lunch and dinner with a courtyard that sets the scene for fine Louisiana cuisine. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Matthew Ellefson is our researcher. Our theme song, Encore Monsieur Nice Guy, is written by Mitch Foreman and performed by Mitch Foreman and Andre Michaud. Our Acadiana business consultants are Pete Prados from Innovate Acadiana, Zach Barker from The Opportunity Machine, and Dr. Blake Escadé. If you want to know what we look like, and I know you do, you can find photos from this show on our website and Facebook page. The photos were taken today by Gwen Oquan. You can get the show as a podcast. You can listen to past shows. You can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites, itsacadiana.com and krvs.org. Support for Out to Lunch Acadiana comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette. Located off Pinhook near Calise Saloon, Wyndham Garden Lafayette offers a complimentary airport shuttle and within a 3-mile radius reaching downtown, shopping, and local restaurants. Additional support comes from ABiz Magazine and AcadianaBusiness.com, the essential information source for business decision makers throughout the One Acadiana region. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. I'm Peter Ricciuti. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you again next week around the table here at Cafe Vermilionville for more business Acadiana style on Out to Lunch.
Major support for Out to Lunch Acadiana is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. Support also comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
Support for KRVS comes from Begna Manufacturing, a precision sheet metal manufacturer and industry innovator. Specializing in precision sheet metal cutting, bending, perforation, forming, laser welding, and assembly. As a locally grown company, Begna prides itself on community engagement and support. Each Friday, Begna invites visitors and clients to tour the facility and enjoy lunch with the team. To schedule a visit, the number is 237-5069. Begna Manufacturing, passionately creating innovative solutions.
You can push things past the breaking point. Put everything on the line, then you're supposed to get what's coming. Maybe. Maybe not. On the next Snap Judgment, crash and burn. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Coming up tonight at 10, on KRVS.
Explore the wide range of musics from throughout the world every week here on Earthbeat. I'm Cecil Doyle, bringing you classics, field recordings, and the latest sounds spanning the globe. That's Earthbeat, Sunday nights at 7 p.m., Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. here on KRVS.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Hello and welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today we're joined by three eminent constitutional law scholars. The first of these is Dr. Rick Swanson.